This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, and joined, as always, in the early portion of the week by Adam Burke. You can follow him on social media at Skating Tripods. Boy, this podcast, even though Adam may not be too thrilled about the situation of his beloved Buckeyes, big week. We got Indiana for Wes Reynolds, Notre Dame for yours truly, and then the Buckeyes for Adam Burke.
Wait a minute, are you a Notre Dame fan, Tim?
I am. I know I keep it under wraps. I keep it hidden. You know, a lot of people don't know that about me, but yeah, surprisingly, I am. You know, I'm very calm, Adam, about all things Notre Dame. Never tweet about them, never wear Notre Dame stuff.
I can't believe it, man. You're like Fort Knox about your fandom. I had no idea.
I appreciate that. Appreciate that. A lot of sincerity in that right there. Yeah, a lot to get to. I have been so in on the playoff expansion since the day it was announced, and it's finally coming to roost. A game on Friday, three on Saturday. And that, you know what's funny about this, Adam, is that I'm thinking so much, and I think so many of us are thinking about these first four games. And then come New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, we get four quarterfinal games. In theory, those should be even better. So it's like, oh, sweet. We get four more of these in the normal New Year's Day, New Year's Eve window. So here we go, baby. Four games right around the corner. Bowl games sprinkled in around there. I'm fired up. We're going to get into these games. But as crazy as it sounds, I think it's being overlooked a little bit that that the quarterfinals are right there too.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, this is kind of what we were hoping for with the 12-team college football playoff. I don't think it's worked out exactly the way that we had hoped. You know, definitely some surprises in there. And of course, you know, we'll see. I mean, hey, maybe those teams that are surprises kind of do step up a little bit. But, you know, I mean, I think there's been a lot of negative talk in college football, and understandably so, over the last few days. You know, Marshall backing out of their bowl game against Army because they don't really have the bodies to play. Huh. You know, everyone complaining about the transfer portal and the timing of it. Look, the reality of it is these kids need to be able to get enrolled by the start of the spring semester. So that's why the transfer portal is when it is and why it closes when it does. So there's really nothing from a calendar standpoint that college football can do about this. But you know what? I think we need more head coaches like Kenny Dillingham, because that guy, dude, I want to crush beers with that guy. Like, he just gets it, man. And the way that he's been talking about the portal kids, he's like, you know, hey, we welcome them to continue to come and practice with us while they're figuring out where they're going. You know, I'm going to support these kids no matter what they do. If they think there's a better opportunity somewhere else, hey, that's awesome. Good for them. Like, this is the mindset you're going to have as a college football coach. And I know that to some degree, you have to be kind of cutthroat, right? Because you want to keep your guys, or you want to get the top guys that are out there. But this reality of college football is probably not going to change anytime soon. And so I think more guys need to kind of embrace it in the way that Dillingham and some others have. And just as a side note here, I mean, you know, look, another, I don't know if I would call him a legend per se, but another tenured head coach who's been around a long time in Dave Clawson stepping down. We're going to continue to see this, as we have with, you know, most notably Nick Saban, but as we have with other guys as well. So, you know, college football, the times are very much a changing, and they've been changing for a while. But yeah, I think we're really seeing it here for the bowl season.
Yeah. And you mentioned that Western Kentucky, Ty Helton, their coach, he's letting Caden Velkamp play in the bowl game for Western Kentucky. He's in the portal. You saw that a couple of years ago. Was it Austin Reed for Western Kentucky? So, you know, one thing from betting these bowl games, make sure you recognize and read when they have those statements, I'm hitting the portal. Make sure you go down a line and say, but are you playing in the bowl game? So, you know, that's something to we have to keep an eye on. But that's one of the Wednesday night games. James Madison is still a touchdown favorite in that one. Gave out a Memphis Western Kentucky money line parlay. We will see how that all plays out there. coming up this week. But we got a lot going on. Real quickly, just a programming note or a free money note, however you want to do it. You have until Thursday to sign up for our bowl challenge for all of the playoff games. vsin.com/jansanity. Do you like free money, Adam? $5,000 on the line, and it's completely free to sign up. Not too shabby.
I do. I do very much enjoy free money. And Road to Jansanity, one of the sponsors of our college football playoff betting guide that came out last Thursday. Obviously, still some shelf life to that. We previewed all the first round games, took a look at the bye teams, had some of our power ratings gurus list their numbers in that guide. Best bets from our VSiN hosts and contributors as well, along with, you know, some of the information about that Road to Jansanity contest. So good time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Get your hands on that college football betting playoff betting guide, and also head over to VSiN.com and jump into that Jansanity contest.
All right, let's get into these games. And I want to start with the game near and dear to your heart. And we've had
Akron's not in a bowl game, Tim.
That is true. Maybe next year. Maybe next year for the Zips. But Ohio State taking on Tennessee. And I tweeted out on Tuesday the early betting splits, and these obviously will change. More casual fans will start betting these. But I was just curious to see what the early betting splits look like. And, of course, you can get those over at vsin.com. I was pretty surprised to see that it was an overwhelming majority right now on Tennessee. 75% of bets, 82% of handle at DraftKings. Now, once again, as we've talked about with all of these betting splits, it's subject to change. Much more money and bets are kind of coming as these games get closer. But to quote our friend Chris Felica, the Bear, feels like this is a bit of a dog with fleas situation. And the hooks have just not gone away. It's just hanging out there. So it's interesting to note that, you know, all of this public money, at least early on, has come in on the Vols, but the number still remains at 7.5. I'm curious. The last time we spoke, the optimism meter wasn't too high for you on the old Buckeyes. What do you make of this game on Saturday night in Columbus?
Man, I'm tired of all the fucking talk from the Ohio State program, right? Chip Kelly, yeah, I did call too many running plays against Michigan. Ryan Day, our players are excited. We're excited. We're ready to go. Will Howard, oh, we can't let Michigan beat us twice. Man, like, they're just a quote factory right now, a cliche factory there in Columbus. And I don't know what direction this program is going in right now. We'll see what happens in this game. But I mean, Ross Bjork's already come out and said, yeah, Ryan Day is my head coach next year. Maybe that changes on Saturday night. I don't know. But man, like, it's one of those things where you're getting a bunch of cliches and a bunch of bullshit out of Ryan Day and, you know, some of the guys who are front facing the media and all that. Meanwhile, you have a lot of the Ohio State blogs who are correct in saying, like, look, like, why are they running fewer plays this year? Like, why aren't they playing with more tempo? Why aren't they out there taking advantages of their speed, their advantage on the outside? If you play with more tempo, it slows down the defensive line. It helps what has been a bad offensive line throughout the course of the season. Like, what is Ryan Day doing with this fucking program? We don't really know. As Ohio State fans. So I understand why there's a lot of negative sentiment out there and why Tennessee is very, very popular and why Tennessee is taking a lot of the money in the early going. But I did hear our friend Jonathan Von Tobel and your co-host on VSiN Primetime on the Lombardi line on Tuesday morning, as you know, we're recording this on Tuesday morning earlier today, saying, hey, there's all this love for Tennessee. There's all this interest in Tennessee. Everybody knows it's a bad matchup for Ohio State in the trenches. Number's still 7.5.
Yep.
So I don't know necessarily what that means. You know, I mean, people are going to say you want to be on the right side of the book. You want to be on the right side of the sharp money, whatever. I don't know what that means necessarily. But what I do know is that it's not a great matchup for Ohio State. I don't have a ton of confidence in Will Howard in a big game. I have no confidence in Ryan Day in a big game. I don't know that Chip Kelly is actually going to learn his lesson because ultimately he wants to run the football. It's what he's done throughout his entire coaching career. And man, am I tired of hearing about the weather? Yes, it's going to be cold. It's going to be cold for both teams. And it hasn't really been cold in Columbus for a game yet outside of the Michigan game. And they looked like shit in that game. So man, I'm tired of hearing about the weather. I'm tired of hearing about the quotes. Just go out there and win the damn football game and use your advantages on the outside.
All right. I think that should do it for the podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Please rate, review, and subscribe. No, man, look, I put in a play on VSiN.com yesterday on Monday. I missed the 47.5, but I'm in on 47 because while I agree and echo the sentiments that you and many of others have said about the matchup for Ohio State up front, dealing with injuries on the offensive line and the rushing game not really fully getting going. You know, you mentioned who you don't trust. You know who I do trust? I trust Jim Knowles, and I trust his defense.
Yep.
And Caleb Downs is probably the best player on the football field on Saturday night. And I'm not saying one defensive player changes everything, but I trust with ample time to prepare Jim Knowles and this defense to make it very challenging for a quarterback in Nico Iamaleava that, look, I was the number one Nico fan coming into the year. I'm like, this dude makes a ton of sense for this system. You know, he's going to be more Hendon Hooker and not Joe Milton. And now he completed 66% of his passes, so he wasn't Joe Milton in that regard. But we were kind of waiting for the breakout game, and I felt like we never got it this year from Nico. And maybe that was a smart move by Josh Heupel. You don't want to put too much on his plate. But, you know, I think back to the Oklahoma game, and they won that game. But it was an ugly game where the defense really dominated, and Oklahoma couldn't do anything with their mismatch of quarterbacks. But I haven't been blown away by what we've seen so far this year from Nico. And is Tennessee just going to try to line up and throw Dylan Sampson, you know, down their throat, so to speak? He's had some monster games this year, of course, you know, had a big, big game against Alabama. He's had, you know, let me count them up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 100-yard rushing performances. And the games that he didn't go for 100 yards, it was UTEP and Oklahoma. He struggled a little bit. But I really trust Jim Knowles, and I trust this defense. And I agree with you. I don't trust Will Howard. He's thrown some backbreaking interceptions so far this year at him. But at the end of the day, I think this is, of the four games, my belief is that this is kind of the ugliest. This is the old cliche, you know, roll up your sleeves type of game, because I trust both of these defenses quite a bit. And barring turnovers, which certainly could come, I think this is more of a lower scoring affair.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, especially again, with all the talk of Ohio State not running as many plays as they did previously, right? I mean, if they're not going to run with any tempo in this game, then this should be a stone cold under type of game. I don't see a ton of explosive plays from either team in this game. Remember, Tennessee was not good from a yards per play standpoint in SEC play. And as much as I've shit on the Buckeyes, and as much as other people have too, they would be a high level SEC team. Right. They would be a top four SEC team based on the talent that they have. So the fact that Tennessee, you know, really didn't do much with their SEC schedule, didn't even play South Carolina, who has an elite defensive front, couldn't play themselves, obviously, even though they have a great defensive front, you know, didn't play Texas A&M, another team who's typically very good on the defensive front. Like, Tennessee struggling playing what really wasn't all that hard of an SEC schedule from an opposing defense standpoint. I don't know if they move the ball a whole lot here on Ohio State. Now, you can pick on guys like Denzel Burke, who's cost himself a ton of money throughout the course of this season. And I do have a question of how this game is called early on, because a guy like Igbinosin for Ohio State is very, very handsy, because he doesn't have the best foot speed. So he's very handsy. So if the referees are calling this pretty tightly, that could be problematic for the Buckeyes secondary. You could get some of those 15-yarders, but at least they're not spot falls like they are in the NFL. So it's a mild concern, not one that would take me off of the under in this game. I do tend to agree with you. I don't see a lot of points. I don't see a lot of Ohio State explosive plays. I don't see, you know, I see a lot of Will Howard having to scramble and use his legs and run a little bit, and you don't get chunk plays out of that. So I agree with you. The under is the way to look in this game.
Three other first round games: Indiana, Notre Dame, SMU, Penn State, Clemson, and Texas. We'll touch on those, give some thoughts on them as well. Of course, Adam will have write-ups over at VSiN.com, so make sure to check those out. But let's take a quick break. When we come back on the other side, speaking of running quarterbacks, what should we expect from Riley Leonard on the ground, and how will the Notre Dame defense stand up against Indiana? We'll get into the Friday night affair in South Bend. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Once again, we mentioned it, and you are much more elaborate on these types of things than I am. But the Road to Jansanity contest going on over at VSiN.com. You have until Thursday at 12:01 p.m. Eastern Time to sign up. The playoff games will each have an assigned value as determined by VSiN. 4 first-round games, 4 quarterfinal games, 2 semifinal games, and 1 championship game. So head over to VSiN.com, Road to Jansanity. It is free to sign up, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, free to sign up. Grand prize is $5,000. So make sure you sign up by Thursday. Anything else I need to add there? Looks like 2,100 folks and counting on the Road to Jansanity.
No, I think you pretty much nailed all of it. And also, you don't have to go up against Tim Murray in this contest because VSiN employees are not allowed to play. So, you know, makes your path, your road to Jansanity a little bit easier to not have to go up against Tim Murray and any of our VSiN personalities. But look, I would say this, while you're over there, our holiday special is $79. Gets you an all-access pass to everything VSiN does from now through May 1st, which would include, of course, the Super Bowl betting guide, March Madness betting guide, MLB season preview, all of our college basketball, NBA, NHL insights on a daily basis. So while you head over there and sign up for the Road to Jansanity contest, there's a subscribe button in the top right corner, too, that you might want to check out.
All right, let's get to Notre Dame, Indiana. Tomorrow, Wes Reynolds will be on Wednesdays with Wes, the enemy, me and him this week. We got to figure out what the friendly wager will be between Wes and I for Notre Dame, Indiana, as they meet for the first time since 1991. Total in this game, 51.5. Feels like a lot of people think this is going to also be a low-scoring game. And unlike Tennessee, Ohio State, Adam, we have seen the hooks get scooped up here. Right now, as we record on a Tuesday morning, Circa, Westgate Superbook, Caesars, William Hill, South Point, they're all down at 7. DraftKings does remain 7.5 if you do want to still grab the dog at that price. Let's look at a couple X factors in this game that you're looking into for Indiana, Notre Dame. Who are some players, some things that you are eyeing up for this showdown on Friday night in South Bend?
Well, I think what I'm going to be really interested to see here is, can Notre Dame get after Curtis Rourke the way that Ohio State did? Because really, when you look at Indiana's schedule, they did not play a good schedule, right? They went 11-1. Good for them. They beat Michigan. I get it. They had under 250 yards of offense in that game too, by the way. Didn't play Penn State. Didn't play Oregon. Had they played those two teams, they're not in the college football playoff, right? So they did what they had to do against a bad schedule. Congratulations for that. And look, you could poke holes in Notre Dame's schedule too.
Yeah.
I mean, not that it's their fault that, you know, some of these games have been scheduled far in advance. Those teams weren't particularly good, but they didn't play at Clemson this year. You know, that would have been a toss-up game. You know, they didn't look great against USC to finish out the season, as we all know. But Notre Dame's front seven is really, really good. And I think that the weakness from Indiana that we didn't really get to see exposed a whole lot because of the caliber of competition they played is that you still have a, you know, transfer-led offensive line, and you have a quarterback who played in the Mid-American Conference last year. And while Curtis Rourke is very, very good as a MAC quarterback, and he's played well, certainly, at Indiana here, what does he do with a Notre Dame defense that's actually going to harass him? Because he was pretty comfortable back there in the pocket throughout most of the season. They were able to run the football. They didn't have to worry about a whole lot of pressure, all these different types of things. I think those are things that are going to be much more difficult to come by here against Notre Dame. So that's what I'm curious to see, honestly. I mean, Rourke is a guy who is relatively mobile, but Ohio State was on him by the time he finished his drop. So if Notre Dame is able to do that, then this is going to be a pretty tough game for Indiana in a lot of ways. Also, I mean, for Notre Dame, How good is this offense, right? I really don't know, but I know that I've got a true dual threat quarterback in Riley Leonard. I know that I've got a really, really good running back in Jeremiah Love. And I know that I've got some guys who can at least get me some completions on third down to keep the chains moving. So I think this is a game where Indiana is overmatched in the trenches. And in the two games where that happened to them, they got blown out by Ohio State and they had under 250 yards against Michigan. If they have under 250 yards against Notre Dame, they are not winning the game. And I don't know that they're covering.
So a couple of things I wanted to get into for Notre Dame offensively. You mentioned it, the three-headed monster in the backfield of Jadarian Price, Jeremiah Love, and Riley Leonard. Jeremiah Love, from all accounts, everything they've told us, he is healthy. I believe at practice on Monday, when the media was able to, you know, view kind of the stretching portion of the practice, he was wearing a padded sleeve on his leg, so something to keep an eye on there. But the guy for me that I think is going to be kind of that X factor for Notre Dame is Mitchell Evans, their tight end. If you remember back to last year, and I know you do, against Ohio State, Notre Dame's go-to receiver in that game was Mitchell Evans. He had 7 catches for 75 yards. And then the following week against Duke, he had 6 catches for 134 yards. And he tore his ACL, Adam, in October, late October last season. And he just hasn't really been fully healthy this year until recently. And he had his best game of the year against USC. He had 5 catches for 59 yards and a touchdown. And I think that's a guy when Notre Dame, in my opinion, they're going to try to run the ball consistently in this game, play to their strengths with Jadarian Price, Jeremiah Love, and Riley Leonard. And I think they're going to try to do what they did against Texas A&M, which was a lot of short, non-risky throws. They don't want Riley Leonard to have the disastrous interception that he did against Northern Illinois or the interception that he had against USC. And I think when I look at the wide receivers for the Irish, whether it be Bo Collins or Jordan Faison, who both have had some issues catching the ball with regularity, I don't see a dynamic athlete out there. I think Mitchell Evans poses a massive mismatch for Indiana's defense. And I think that's a guy that Riley Leonard is going to key in on. So when I go over to FanDuel, over under is 27.5 receiving yards. When I go to DraftKings, if you wanted to do the old, you know, ladder prop, you can take a look at Mitchell Evans there. Over 50 yards receiving is plus 255. I think Mitchell Evans to me is a big key to the Irish's success on Saturday to kind of get a little more into the weeds. And let me ask you this, because obviously here we are, it's mid to late December. Betting sides and totals is the way that most people want to go. And I certainly will have angles that way, but these games are going to be booked like NFL playoff games, right? There's going to be lots of opportunities to bet these. So I think there are a unique ways, Adam, to attack each and every playoff game from a betting angle.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're at a book that has the capability for college football player props, definitely a good way to look, certainly. And I also think that, you know, there will be a lot of live betting opportunities in these games as well, because, I mean, keep in mind, the thing about the bowl season is, you know, you're not playing week in and week out, right? I mean, you've got a long layoff, especially you think about the teams that got the byes to the quarterfinals here. I mean, they're going to go over a month without playing in some cases. So, you know, I guess close to a month, but it is one of those things where, you know, you've got this big, long layoff now. So it may take some time for these teams to kind of get into rhythm, to kind of get things going a little bit. I mean, maybe you get a couple of three and outs early on and all of a sudden the total drops a few points. If you liked an over, it may take some time for that game to kind of get going. So live betting, player prop markets, if you have access to them, of course we don't out here in Nevada, but you know, there are definitely ways to really kind of key in on these games in a different way. And look, like you, I mean, I think that you kind of look for the advantages, the disadvantages, the things that maybe haven't been as present throughout the course of the season as they should be. And I think that the Evans one definitely makes sense here. And I think that also because, you know, Colson Loveland didn't really do anything in the head-to-head meeting against Indiana, I think that's going to be something where that price is going to be a little bit short on his player prop, because that's going to be kind of your, you know, your reference point. But also Michigan didn't really have a passing game most of the season, and Notre Dame actually does.
Yeah, and I think also the fact that Mitchell Evans has not had a breakout season like some were thinking, and a lot of that has to do with his health coming off of the ACL tear. So that's certainly one way I'm looking to attack this game. Now that we're at 7, and you know, I'll finalize my card for Thursday's podcast with humans, but now that we're at 7, are you intrigued to look at the Irish here at home?
Do we get 6.5? Do you think there's any chance that it gets there?
I don't know. I asked humans that on Thursday. He felt like it wouldn't. And here's our weekly shout out to our mutual friend, Brad Powers. I was talking to him last week and he said, hey, do we get a 6.5 here? You know, like he said to me, I think his quote was, I think I'm going to get greedy and just wait, because it does feel like the appetite, at least for Notre Dame, Indiana, and Tennessee, Ohio State, is on the dog. And I mentioned those early betting splits over at VSiN.com. It's not as drastically different, but there is, according to the betting splits, more appetite right now for Indiana plus the points than there is to lay it with the Irish. And, you know, when you look at those DraftKings numbers, it's pretty overwhelming. Not overwhelming. It's like 60-40, and it certainly could flip. But I don't know if we get 6.5. I would imagine if we got 6.5, you better have your phone ready and to fire, because that thing will go away immediately.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely, you know, I mean, if it gets to 6.5 somewhere, you absolutely have to be ready to go. I will say, I don't think we need to take 7 minus 115.
No.
You know, the number that's out there now as we're recording, you'll get 7 minus 105, maybe 7 even money on this one, because, you know, I think for that reason, right? I think that unless there's a book who identifies a need to get some Notre Dame money back, that's when they might go to 6.5, maybe minus 20, just to kind of float it out there, something like that, and see what happens. But I think you'll be able to get 7 at reduced juice or even money, something like that here, before this game actually goes on Friday night.
All right, let's hit on the other two playoff games, maybe talk some bowls real quickly. As always, we will continue to break these games down Wednesdays with Wes. We will also have Matt Newman's on. Make sure you read Adam's work over at VSiN.com as well. SMU Penn State, who's got the better quarterback?
Depends. So, do you get the Drew Aller from the Oregon game? So or do you get the Drew Aller from the Ohio State game?
And I did this exercise on Saturday on the tailgate show, and I had Dustin Sweetelson come in studio and sit next to me because I was curious his. And this may be a discussion for a whole other podcast, but I would say, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, I would say outside of Dylan Gabriel being one and Maddox Madsen and Gunnar Stockton being 11-12 in some order, I feel like you can rank the rest of the quarterbacks in the CFP in any which possible way, 2 through 10. Am I crazy in that?
No, I don't think so. I think, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of interchangeable.
Who's your number two? I put Cade Klubnik, and people kind of thought I was crazy, and maybe I am. Maybe I'm too high on
his. Cade Klubnik's a good one.
He's good, man. Like, he's having really a really good year. He's got 40 touchdowns total and 5 picks. Like, he's played really good football, and I feel like because Adam, he was a 5-star, he didn't play all that well last year. People more or less wrote him off. They obviously got their ass kicked in the opener against Georgia. Look at the numbers. And once again, you could poke holes in everybody outside of, I think, Dylan Gabriel. I think Cade Klubnik, you can make an argument as the second best quarterback, but I would hear arguments for Curtis Rourke. If you look at just his raw numbers, his passer efficiency is off the charts. Riley Leonard, a dual threat ability of him. Kevin Jennings, Drew Aller. Like, I'm lower on Will Howard. I think you are as well. I haven't really seen it from Nico. You know, Quinn Ewers has got talent, but do you think he's that good? I think you could poke holes in so many of these quarterbacks. It's what makes this playoff, in my opinion, so intriguing. It's so wide open.
Yeah, I would put Cade Klubnik second. I agree with that take. I think that's a very, very sharp take. And furthermore, I mean, not that Clemson is devoid of talent at the wide receiver position, but imagine if Dabo actually used the portal and gave that kid an offensive line and maybe, you know, got one of the premier transfer wide receivers, something like that. I mean, what he's done with what he has, and again, I think they're very talented. They're a little bit raw on the outside, but they are very talented. But, I mean, he hasn't had a great offensive line throughout the course of the season either. and he's played extremely well. And the thing about Drew Aller is, up until that performance against Oregon, like, nobody would have talked about him as being the second best quarterback in this game, right? Because you don't really hear anything about him. I mean, and he still threw two picks in that game and only threw for 226 yards. But I thought that, you know, he made some plays in that game. That was one where the box score doesn't really line up with the eye test, where he made some throws in that game that were outrageously good. And then all of a sudden you had the NFL draft scouts talking again about him. But I don't think people would have really thought that highly of Drew Aller coming into the playoff if not for what we saw with our eyes in that game against Oregon. The Kevin Jennings one is tough, right? Because, and I think this will be held against Cade Klubnik too, the ACC sucks on defense, like on an annual basis, right? And this is a kid who, you know, comes from the AAC to the ACC, throws for over 3,000 yards. He's definitely mobile enough to be dangerous. And the scheme is really good for him too, I think. But remember, I mean, this is a team that was going with Preston Stone out of the gate. So, you know, credit to Jennings for what he's been able to accomplish this season.
All right. Any other notable thoughts on the two, can we call them the two undercard games of the first round of the playoff, where you've got Clemson catching 11.5 right now against Texas, and then SMU at Penn State?
So the more I've kind of looked at this game, the more I've come around on Penn State covering the number. I don't like James Franklin at all whatsoever. I'm not a big Penn James. State fan as a team, but I just, the one thing that holds Clemson back is really their offensive line, right? So I think SMU was able to kind of take that game over in the trenches a little bit as it kind of wore on. I don't think they have that opportunity against Penn State. I don't think that they can win the battle in the trenches. I don't think you're going to see 6 yards a carry from Breshard Smith like you saw during the regular season. Penn State's going to force feed the ball to Tyler Warren, and maybe that becomes problematic, but that dude's just a wrecking ball of a player. The biggest thing to me about Penn State is that they figured out the running game in that game against Oregon. Katron Allen and Nicholas Singleton, both over 100 yards. Those were two guys that had really struggled on the whole throughout the course of the season, where Singleton, I mean, his other 100-yard games were against Bowling Green and West Virginia early on in the year. And Katron Allen had a few of them against Illinois late September, but hadn't had one since then. They got the ground game going, and I think they can just lean on SMU. I think SMU, their defensive metrics, I don't think are as indicative of, you know, the true talent level of this team, because they just didn't play a very good schedule. So I think Penn State leans on them enough to cover the 8.5. And I don't seem to have a whole lot of support. I mean, this is a dog not getting support at all, really. But I still think Clemson is the side against Texas. Unless Arch Manning is going to wind up playing a good chunk of this game, I don't trust Quinn Ewers against Clemson. So I think Clemson at least keeps that close.
It would be dog or pass for me. I haven't gotten to the window. The only bet I've made so far on the first round is the under in Tennessee, Ohio State. I wrote up a look ahead line for Texas against Arizona State at -11.5, Adam, because I think if that matchup comes around, I think it's a brutal matchup for Arizona State. I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball like they did against Iowa State, especially with Jordan Tyson out. But I think I could definitely talk myself into taking 11.5, 12 with Clemson there in the first round of the playoff. So certainly something to keep an eye on there. I just wanted to run through just some thoughts, if you want to, for the other bowl games. Interesting to note here, Tuesday morning, I guess JVT is just betting nonstop on UNLV, because UNLV now, Adam, out to a 2-point favorite in the LA Bowl over Cal. This was a game that was 4.5 when the news of Barry Odom came out that he would indeed be going to Purdue. And then Fernando Mendoza hit the portal. He's not going to play for Cal. And UNLV, from all accounts, everybody's going to play. Haven't officially seen whether or not Ricky White is going to play, but I think UNLV is going to be rather motivated. I know historically speaking, teams that lose their coaches don't fare well in bowl games, but I took UNLV 3 when the news came out that Mendoza was out, so I wouldn't bet it here, but interesting to see the market moving like it is on the LA Bowl on Tuesday morning.
Well, and look, I mean, Cal's got some major offensive line concerns. You know, Nick Morrow, he didn't play in the regular season finale. He's not going to play in the bowl game. They have, you know, some other guys. They have some depth issues. They have some injury issues, stuff like that. Maybe this is a sign that Javian Thomas isn't going to play. He didn't play against SMU in the finale. So maybe you've got just kind of look, because a lot of this stuff is going to be predicated on cluster injuries, opt-outs, transfers, stuff like that. So it seems like Cal just has a lot of things going on the offensive side. And look, UNLV hasn't won a bowl game since 2000. And they just hired Dan Mullen, which is an insanely good hire.
Yep.
I mean, somehow they lost Barry Odom and upgraded. Like, there's some serious momentum within this program right now. And I think the kids are going to feed off of that. I think UNLV, I took him at pick. As you said, it's now out to two. Anything under three, I think, is fine. And honestly, I mean, I just don't know if Cal really shows up here. And also, we don't even know who the hell is playing quarterback for Cal.
Yeah, we do not. Speaking of momentum, the Gasparilla Bowl on Friday, the appetizer leading into Indiana Notre Dame down at Raymond James Stadium. Florida out to as high as a 14-point favorite. We've seen a little bit of buyback here on Tulane. Ty Thompson is going to play before hopping in the portal there for Tulane. Darian Mensah, he's already committed to Duke. He's not going to play in this one. You know, this is one of those situations where I said it kind of tongue-in-cheek during the offseason podcast, Adam, where I said, if Florida makes a bowl game, Billy Napier should be coach of the year. And he's done a quietly pretty good job there. And this Florida team is playing much better football down the stretch. That said, I don't really have interest in laying 14 with them here. I know they played extremely well down the stretch. They beat LSU. They beat Ole Miss. They beat Florida State. Obviously, they got their teeth kicked in by Texas, but that was a situation where, what, you had the Yale transfer, Aiden Warner, playing in that one. So I think there's real momentum here with Florida. If you've looked at, you know, their recruiting and portal, et cetera, could you lay under a touchdown with Florida here in this spot? Tulane is going to keep their coach. John Summerall is going to stay. And the last time we saw Tulane, they looked very uninterested in playing up in West Point.
No, I think Tulane's the side here. I think this line's just gotten too high where it's 14. I mean, Ty Thompson was, what, high four-star, low five-star kid going up to Oregon. And, you know, now he gets the opportunity at Tulane. And frankly, I thought he would win the job over Mensah coming into the season. I was really high on this Tulane team coming into the year. I thought they had a chance to knock off one of Kansas State or Oklahoma, be that group of five team in the college football playoff. I'm not really surprised with the no-show against Army, just because, I mean, their college football playoff dreams got dashed, right? Army's a very tough team to try to defend. Yeah, you could have won a conference championship, but when you have a potential group of five playoff berth, you know, on the horizon, I think that's what matters the most to you. I'm not surprised with the no-show, and I think John Summerall is a really good head coach, and the fact that he's staying, look, we can talk about who's not there, but also we should consider who is there. Right? Kids who have been dying for a chance to play all season long, an opportunity to show themselves, to win a starting spot for next season, to take advantage of all these extra practices and all of that. I think Ty Thompson's still a really good player. Maybe he's not as good as Darian Mensah. I don't know. But what I do know is John Summerall is a hell of a head coach. So I think 14 is just too many at this point in time, where Billy did a hell of a job with Florida, but I think John Summerall is a pretty damn good coach too.
All right. Any other games you want to note? Games that I've bet, I took UConn plus 4.5. That's down to 2.5 in the Fenway Bowl, even though the hiring of Bill Belichick and our now former colleague, Michael Lombardi, certainly there's some momentum there. Maybe you get UNC players wanting to play hard for Bill Belichick. Other games that I bet Michigan plus 11.5. That dipped down to 9.5 for a moment. Now it's on the buyback here. I actually don't love that bet just because, you know, we talked about it last week. There's going to be some opt-outs on the D-line there for Michigan for sure. Jalen Milroe says he's coming back, I think. I don't really know. And the other one that I bet that it was voided, appreciate you, Marshall, was Army. I do have some interest. I haven't gotten there yet. We're starting to see the market move with Navy. There's some 7.5s out there. I just like backing military academies in bowl games. You know, if you're Oklahoma, you really want to get a mess with this triple option. I get it. They've got more athletes. They should win this game. When Navy punched up in class, they got their butt whipped by Notre Dame. But bowl games are different, man. Is Oklahoma going to be all gung-ho to play in the Armed Forces Bowl? So staring a little bit at Navy plus 7.5. Any other bowl games for you? Worth noting, by the way, John Mateer, the quarterback for Washington State, finally officially opted out. So that number in the Holiday Bowl against Syracuse has now ballooned out to 11.5.
Yeah, I got a few that I like here. I like Sam Houston State on Thursday night in the New Orleans Bowl.
Bearcats with a K, baby.
They're getting 6 here against Georgia Southern. I know Casey Keeler left for the Temple job, but there are a lot of potential opt-outs in that game that are playing. A lot of their talent on the defensive side, and this is a great defensive team by Group of Five standards. A lot of those guys are leaving, but they're playing the bowl game. A lot of them are like, look, I'll make my decision, you know, December 21st, December 23rd, whatever, but I'm playing in the bowl game. That's a good sign to me of a team that is still together. I know the coaching staff's getting broken up and all that. They still haven't named a head coach yet, but the boys are going to fight for each other. And I don't think Georgia Southern's really all that good of a team anyway. So I like Sam Houston State getting 6 in that one. Also, UTSA is going to beat the absolute shit out of Coastal Carolina. It's a home game for Coastal. They're playing in the Myrtle Beach Bowl. They don't even get to go anywhere fun. They're just on the teal turf. Yeah, maybe being at home and not traveling and whatever, maybe that's an advantage. But they don't have a quarterback right now who has really thrown a pass at the collegiate level. Both of the guys they use this year are in the portal. Freshmen behind them. Hey, maybe a guy has a coming out party, something like that. But UTSA was very, very good offensively in the latter portion of the season. Jeff Traylor figured it out. McCown played at an elite level. I think this line's going to keep going up. It's 9 right now. I think it keeps going up in the double digits. I think the Roadrunners run away with this game. Also, 11 a.m. kick in Myrtle Beach. Nobody on campus. Nobody's going to this football game. I think UTSA boat races the Chanticleers.
All right, there you go. Follow Adam on Twitter at Skating Tripods. Read all of his content over at vsin.com. We'll have bowl guides up. Easy for me to say.
Bowl guides.
Yep. Bowl guides, guide bowls, whatever. I'll be on the blue turf, by the way, on Monday. Looking forward to the famous Idaho Potato Bowl as I get to see Northern Illinois up close and personal. The only team to this time that has beaten Notre Dame this year. By the way, on Tuesday morning, this will be my parting gift. DraftKings just went to 7 on Tennessee, Ohio State. So the hook just finally got scooped at one shop. All right, that's going to do it for the podcast. We're back tomorrow with Wes Reynolds. As always, please rate, review, and subscribe. This is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.